Now that she was closer to the hounds, Harris had to admit they sounded almost like horns themselves. She gathered herself just in time as Tiger sprang upward, dodging through trees with no regard at all for her legs. She could steer him, she found, and even moderate his speed. She pulled him to a solid canter rather than a headlong gallop. They came out of the trees to find the hounds strung out on that hill's bald top, with the field close behind them and the fox in view before. Harris managed to swing Tiger around behind the front runners, though he fought her. Then they were in with the others, galloping over short grass toward what looked like a pile of rocks. The leaders swerved around it and poured over a wall just ahead of Harris. Tiger rose to the wall, and she got a quick glimpse of where they were going. The hounds, the streak of red-brown that must be the fox, the huntsman in red. Before they were into the next field, this one draped across the shoulder of its hill like a shawl. Tiger flattened beneath her, passing a gray horse and a black, and jumping the briars and stones that separated that field from another. His earlier exertions hadn't tired the red horse, and he was pulling her arms out. The leaders were nearer now, as Tiger thundered on, lunging against the reins, and his next jump put him even with the first of the field. Harris knew she should be holding him back, but excitement sang the last remnants of doubt out of her bones. She had not felt this exultation since she pushed that away. Now, this horse, this field, this next jump was all that mattered. All in a clump, they raced, angling across the field after the hounds to jump a sharp ditch. Someone fell there, but Tiger had carried her over safely. Ahead was another rock pile to which the fox sped and into which it vanished. The hounds swarmed over it, but they were not diggers, and the fox had found a safe lair. Harris got Tiger slowed, then circled him until he walked. He was wet and breathing hard, but clearly not exhausted. Nor was she. She hoped they'd find another fox and do it again. She could have laughed at her earlier mood. Boring, this? No, it was all Cecilia had promised. The huntsman set to work to call the hounds back and get them in order. Meanwhile, the rest of the Blue Hunt rode up. Some she had met, and some she hadn't. All now willing to speak to her and tell her how well she'd done.
Oh, you did splendidly. I didn't really. I got lost, then the horse seemed to hear something. Oh, but that's wonderful.
The woman had one wrist in a brace, and Harris realized it was the same one she'd seen at dinner.
That's what you're supposed to do. You actually caught up. Most people, once they're lost, spend the whole day wandering around without a clue, or give up and go home. Which hill were you on?
Harris looked around, but had no idea. The jumbled landscape looked as confused to her as a star chart probably would to these people.
It was near the beginning. There was a track through woods, then a creek, then a lot of tracks straight up the hill.
The goose egg? You got here in time for the final run from Goose Egg?
Now they seemed even more impressed. Harris wondered why. She thought of asking, but shrugged instead.
Tiger did it.
It was true anyway. He had known where to go, and he'd taken her there without any serious bruises. They liked that, she could see. Cecilia had told her that horse people expect riders to praise horses and take the blame themselves for errors. For a time, nothing much happened. The hounds stood panting, tongues hanging out. Some of them flopped down and rolled. Riders stretched or took a swallow from flasks in the saddlebag. A few dismounted and disappeared discreetly behind the rock pile. A few stragglers appeared, one by one, on lathered mounts, but perhaps a third of the field had disappeared. Harris wondered if they were going to look for another fox. It was still morning by the sun. When the hunt moved again, it was both calmer and more businesslike than the morning's first action. Harris felt the difference as a sense of purpose, as if a ship's crew steadied to some task. First, the huntsman took the hounds down the field toward a patch of woods near a stream. This one, Harris noted from the hillside, widened to a pond at one point. Riders rechecked girths and stirrups. Those who had dismounted got up again, and those who had been chatting stopped. Someone Harris didn't yet know put to her eye a most untraditional military issue eyepiece. Harris wished she herself had had the wit to get one. That lucky soul would be seeing whatever she looked at in plenty of magnification and perfect lighting. She could see fleas on the fox's coat if a fox came out. Then the hounds found another trail. Tiger trembled. Harris steadied him, but didn't hold him back to the rear of the group this time. Steadily, without haste, the field moved toward the call at a brisk trot. This time, no one in front of Harris had a refusal at the low wall and ditch, nor did she, and they trotted on through the woods. Behind her, the bulk of the field stretched out. Out of the woods, she could see the scarlet coats ahead, the hounds now 50 meters in the lead across a field. Tiger wasn't pulling as badly, but her sentiments were with him now. She would like to have charged at the next field as fast as he would go. It had become more than the physical delight of riding over fences at speed. It was a hunt, and she wanted to be part of it. Now she could admit it to herself. She had not felt this completely alive, this exultant, since she'd commanded her own ship in combat. And that had been tempered with grief and worry, knowing that she risked her crew, people who trusted her. Here, she risked only herself. She had no responsibility for the others. No wonder people liked hunting. But she had no more time to think about it, and that too became part of the pleasure. That run, her first full run, remained a confusion in her mind when she tried to tell Cecilia about it. Field and wood and field succeeded each other too rapidly. She had to concentrate on riding, steering Tiger around trees and readying herself for the fences, walls, ditches, banks that came at her every time she thought she'd caught her breath. It felt as if they'd been riding all day, a lifetime, when she realized that they'd caught the fox out in the middle of a vast open bowl between the hills, with a little stinking marsh off to one side. This time, Tiger was willing to stop. She sat, hoping she would not disgrace herself by slithering off his back to lie in a heap on the ground. Breath and awareness came back to her even as the rest of the field came up.
You can ride. Don't tell me it's all that horse. I've ridden him myself.
In the hunting frenzy of Lord Thornbuckle's establishment, Ronnie saw his companions change. Buttons, who had been growing perceptibly stuffier over the last year, became a proper son of the household and took over the Red Hunt without complaint. He seemed almost a parody of his father, despite the difference in looks. Sarah simply vanished. When they asked, Buttons looked down his nose and muttered something about wedding preparations. Ronnie wished he had such a handy excuse. The others had to undergo evaluation by the head trainer. A humiliating experience, Ronnie thought. Rafaela rode better than he'd expected. Though the trainer complained about her form, she never fell off, and was passed to the Blue Hunt after only a week's review. He and George and Bubbles, though, were stuck with two daily lessons. Ronnie hated the lessons. They spent nearly all the time at a walk or trot, with a sharp-voiced junior trainer nagging them about things Ronnie was sure didn't really matter. The trainer wasn't nearly as hard on Bubbles. He figured that was favoritism toward a family member. Afterwards, on the way back to the house to swim or play chip ball, Bubbles would critique his lesson again, in detail. She was supposed to be his girlfriend, but she'd been acting as if he were a nuisance. The crisp, clear weather of the first few days ended with a cold front, clouds, and drizzle. It made no difference what the weather was. Lessons and hunts went out on schedule. Ronnie hated the cold trickle down the back of his neck, the horrid dankness of wet boots, and he didn't want to get used to it.
Oh, tradition be damned. Why can't we wear proper weather-sensing clothing like the Royal Service does on maneuvers?
At dinner each day, the main house crowd seemed to divide naturally along hunt lines. The Greens, his Aunt Cecilia, quite prominent among them, had their favorite rooms and corners, and so did the Blues. The Reds condescended subtly to those not yet assigned, but knew their place compared to the other hunts. Bubbles left them, pointedly showing off, Ronnie thought, her ability to mingle with ease as well as her white shoulders. The only young women among the unassigned were too young for him and too gawky. A pair of earnest cousins so obviously overawed by their surroundings that they blushed if anyone came near. When Captain Serrano showed up with a foxtail one evening, he was supposed to call it the brush, after her first hunt with the Blues, Ronnie was disgusted. He had spent 5 hours that day riding three different horses in boring circles, trotting over boring little fences in a boring ring. He'd been told he might be allowed on the outside course in a couple of days if he concentrated. And she, 20 years older if a day, had been allowed to skip the red hunt altogether, go into the blues, and had had a good first hunt. It wasn't fair. For the first time since his lessons on the ship, he thought of revenge, but he resisted. It wasn't worth it. His only solace in these trying days was Rafaela, of all people. George dragged her away with a group of blues one night and gave a humorous account of their day's lessons. Ronnie felt humiliated. He didn't fall off that often, and George didn't mention any of his own mistakes, but Rafaela's glance at him was sympathetic. After that, she came of her own accord every evening for a few minutes at least. She asked once where Bubbles was, and Ronnie shrugged. She asked no more, but he noticed that she talked to both of them, not just George. And when George was taken up by a group of older men who knew his father, Rafaela kept coming, chatting quietly with Ronnie in a way he found more and more soothing.